Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
It's no secret that mercury has numerous harmful effects on your health and the environment. With all 50 states having advisories against mercury consumption, you'd think dangerous exposures would be few and far between. But that's not the case. Despite research dating back to the 1800s proving that mercury toxicity can be fatal, the element still contaminates our food, water, and air. While all mercury is unsafe to a degree, the most poisonous form of mercury, according to scientists, is methylmercury. It forms when metallic mercury reacts with bacteria in water, soil, and plants. When humans ingest mercury, it's mainly in this form. Dr. Charles Driscoll explains a unique property of methylmercury that puts humans at an even greater risk of harm.
Methylmercury increases up the food chain. So to give you an idea of the effects, if you take the increase in the concentration of methylmercury in water to the concentration that you might find in a game fish, the methylmercury concentrations would increase by a factor of on the order of 10 million. We can get to relatively low concentrations in water, but very, very high concentrations in fish due to this process called biomagnification.
Driscoll is a professor in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering at Syracuse University. He says fish are the most common source of methylmercury exposure, which leads to an elevated risk of numerous health effects for frequent consumers.
Originally, we thought that the effects of mercury were largely in terms of developmental effects, primarily for unborn children or young children who have developing neurological systems. So historically, that's been the major concern. But we're finding that mercury affects all sorts of health metrics. There's a pretty strong linkage to heart attacks, fatal and non-fatal heart attacks. So you could aggravate a system, a cardiovascular system that you would have that would create chronic problems in terms of the function of your heart.
In addition to heart attacks, a new study published in Cancer Causes and Control reveals a connection between fish consumption and an increased chance of developing melanoma, a type of skin cancer. However, a long-term exposure isn't the only threat. If too much mercury is ingested at once, there's a risk of contracting mercury poisoning, which can have debilitating symptoms.
Some of the earliest complaints are people who experience a tingling around their face and tongue, or pins and needles in their feet. And one of the odd symptoms we've heard several times is, I feel like I'm walking on broken glass. Some of the people have noticed that their gait is awkward, that they can't run, that they're worried about falling.
That's Dr. Michael Goshfeld, Professor Emeritus of Biomedical and Health Sciences at Rutgers University. He explains how mercury poisoning can be life-changing.
One of the women we evaluated years ago was a guitarist, and she said her strums she couldn't do her strums anymore. She noticed them getting more and more awkward, and she began, you know, just twanging on the guitar rather than finger-picking. And she ate fish every day and had a particular preference for tuna and swordfish.
But fish aren't the only culprit. Both Goshfeld and Driscoll explain how exposure can come from unexpected sources.
The other biggie is probably rice. And it's largely because we talked about the formation of this chemical methylmercury. So it usually occurs in wetlands. So rice is produced in paddies and it has the environment where there can be a lot of production of methylmercury.
And though humans usually contact mercury in food sources, the substance is heavily present and dangerous in our environment.
In the environment, methylmercury can accumulate and can be problematic in the food chain. One of the things that's occurred in South America, harder to document here because we don't have the same kind of deforestation. Now, our deforestation took place centuries ago. But in the Amazon, where there's a lot of deforestation, the flooding, mercury that occurs naturally in the soil is getting converted to methylmercury, where it didn't exist as methylmercury before.
It then cycles through vegetation, affecting nearly all components of an ecosystem.
It's taken up by plants like carbon dioxide, so it's taken up in the leaves. And so these massive forests in the tropics with these huge canopies take up massive amounts of mercury and cause local contamination within these very, very large, pristine forest systems. And then when that matter, that leaf matter breaks down, it releases mercury to the environment, gets taken up by bugs and birds and so on and so forth, and contributes to some of the local contamination.
Driscoll says this process creates a significant issue, but it's not the only problem. Another common form of exposure comes from a global industry.
The biggest source of mercury globally is through small-scale gold mining. In developing countries, even in the U.S., what people do is they use mercury to extract gold, mostly from river systems that are in small particles. So they can mix, they can take the gold out, separate it by letting the particles settle, and then they mix in mercury, and the gold will sort of dissolve in the mercury.
And then is extracted by boiling off the mercury, which exposes miners to toxic fumes. Due to the prevalence of gold mining in countries such as Peru, Brazil, and Sierra Leone, these regions are highly vulnerable to mercury's harmful effects. And though mining is a main source of exposure, communities without this industry still face frequent contact with mercury. Driscoll says the ones most at risk are fishing, low-income, and indigenous communities.
If you look at the groups that are catching the fish and consuming the fish, a lot of them are low-income families that need the protein, and a lot of them are groups that really consumption of fish is part of their culture, part of their cultural identity. And it's very hard for them to get away from that. And so I think that there's a variety of factors, but if you look across the statistics of exposure to mercury, minority groups typically have a disproportionate exposure. Native American communities, Asiatic communities in particular, have very, very high exposure to mercury. And I think those are in part because of cultural considerations.
With the health and safety of so many groups endangered by this toxic substance, it begs the question, how has the government responded to this issue?
The history of mercury management in the U.S. has been very, very strange. Originally, it was decided in the Obama administration to control mercury emissions from power plants. Power plants had historically been an uncontrolled source of mercury. And then that was reversed in the Trump administration. Even though all the power plants basically had implemented their emission controls. And now in the Biden administration, they are considering reinstating that. So the government has sort of flip-flopped back and forth. And it even dates back to the Bush administration, these flip-flops. So it's been a very inconsistent approach.
Driscoll says the erratic policies are due to an incorrect cost-benefit analysis by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. In their evaluation, the agency overestimated the costs while underestimating the benefits. Driscoll says the final assessment made it seem like lowering mercury emissions was an expensive project for such a seemingly small gain. With environmental exposures, inconsistent government policy, and cultural norms of fish consumption, both Goshfeld and Driscoll say that mercury will always be present in the U.S. However, there are ways to protect yourself from the chemical's most harmful effects.
If you eat fish very frequently, you really need to pay attention to low-mercury fish. And the high-mercury fish, it seems to be fairly well known nowadays, the high-mercury fish are the large predatory fish, such as swordfish, shark, large tuna, and even large bass. Whereas the low-mercury fish, these are ones that are low on the food chain. Salmon is a particularly good example, but some of the high oily fish like sardines also have benefits as well.
Goshfeld recommends checking the FDA website to see a full list of mercury levels across various fish types. But he reminds us that the occasional consumption of high mercury fish won't do any significant damage.
if you eat fish infrequently, less than once a week, if you eat fish frequently, you can occasionally splurge on a tuna steak without probably having any harm. Now, I don't recommend that during pregnancy, because during pregnancy, if you do get a bolus or a large dose of mercury in a particular day, we don't know that that's a safe thing to do. But for the non-pregnant person, an occasional splurge is probably not going to do any measurable harm. So an occasional tuna dinner shouldn't be a problem. Some of these serious mercury cases we've seen have been people who eat tuna sushi every day.
He also says that for infrequent consumers, eating fish can actually have some health benefits.
Overall, there's substantial evidence in a number of epidemiologic studies that people who eat fish with some frequency, up to about twice a week, experience health benefits when compared to people who eat fish rarely.
These health benefits include improved cardiovascular health and a reduced risk of developing autoimmune diseases. However, experts recommend that we take precautions against ingesting too much mercury. You can find more information about Drs. Charles Driscoll, Michael Goshfeld, and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. Our producer is Kristen Farah. Our associate producer this week is Grace Galante. I'm Reed Pence. Coming up next week on Radio Health Journal.
I think we've been aware of microplastics longer than we care to admit.
The nearly invisible problem with plastic.
Then have you thought about the future of public safety?
I think that we're at a point in history, actually, where we can transform something that is a human right and a human need.
All that and more on Radio Health Journal.
I'm Nancy Benson, host of Radio Health Journal. If you enjoy listening to Radio Health Journal, you'll also like our sister show, Viewpoints, which covers a wide array of topics from education to history to the environment. Here's a preview of what they're covering this week on Viewpoints.
There was a kid from South Philly, a third floor walk up, had left me standing at midcourt before 10 or 11,000 fans.
One man's journey from fighting to play in the NBA to becoming coach of the year. Then,
for those kids' parents, that white t-shirt would have been seen as underwear. So for them to wear it out the house sort of by itself would have kind of raised eyebrows, which no doubt they were keen to do.
The evolution of the classic white tee. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
And that's Radio Health Journal for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more. And check Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify for a library of past programs. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and information about our guests at radiohealthjournal.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.